Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMelt with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM in your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, thoughts, help you lead a more positively minded life. All right, so let's question a couple of things, you know. The symbol of, here we go, I was talking to Anthony Riddle the other day, and he was telling me how he appreciated a lot of the callers who were calling into the radio program, and he came up with an idea. He said to me, he's the manager at WBAI, he said to me, you know, Armand, he said, I think I've figured out what it is about people that's so hard for me to understand. And I asked him, I said, Tony, what is it? And he said, it's when people see you as a symbol rather than who you are. He said, I think that lies underneath a lot of the problems that people have. I thought, what an interesting thought. So I put that together with some interesting research and thought about people as symbols, you know. A symbol is something such as an object, a picture, a sound, a mark, that represents something by association, by resemblance, by convention. For example, a red octagon may stand for stop. On maps, cross sabers may indicate a battlefield. Numerals are symbols for numbers. Letters are symbol for words, a symbol for animals. For example, the word cat. It's a symbol. The C-A-T, put together, put in your mind an image of a cat. Every word is a symbol. So symbols are real shortcuts. You know, if we have a symbol, it's a real shortcut to what we're talking about or where we want to go. However, symbols also create associations in our minds. And these symbols kind of create automatic reactions. So if you're a child, and you have something terrifies you as a child, like let's say you get bitten by mosquitoes when you're in a crib, in a hot summer flat somewhere up in Harlem, with a window open as I knew people did, and you get bitten by mosquitoes, well, your reaction to mosquitoes is going to be bigger than the other person's reactions. Now the reaction to the sound of mosquitoes is going to be bigger. Because the mosquito becomes a symbol. What is it a symbol of? Not of mosquitoes. It's a symbol of pain that you couldn't get away from. It's a symbol of powerlessness. So the sound of a mosquito makes you suddenly feel like you can't handle it. Symbols. They did a study, of course, with Pavlov's dogs who salivated when they heard a sound which was associated with food. They gave a bell, then they gave the dog food. So the dog would salivate when it heard the bell, not when it saw the food, because by association. There seem to be other very important symbols in our society. And the Carl Jung, who was a psychiatrist who studied archetypes, he proposed an alternative definition of symbol. He said it's kind of like a sign, but it's a way of seeing yourself. Now, keep in mind, all languages are made up of symbols. Aristotle himself taught that spoken words are the symbols of mental experience, and written words are the symbols of spoken words. Get that? The spoken word is a symbol of a life experience. When I say to you, banana, right? But then when I write the word banana, it's a symbol of the spoken word, which is a symbol of the actual thing. All right, so where does this take us? There's a man who fills a job. He fills the job as the head of an organization. And it's a job that's given to him. He could be the head of Citibank. He could be the head of WBAI. He could be the head of any place. Once you're the head, you become a symbol. Now, there are people who love heads of businesses, and usually those are people who got along with their fathers well. When you get along with your father, you get along with the bosses. These are called authority figures. An authority figure is a symbol. You didn't get along with your father. Your father hurt you in some way. You generally get angry at authority figures. Authority figures could be anything from police to any uniform. Authority figures are also father figures. You know, somebody who is representing a dad to you. You know, people say, I was looking for my father. A woman says she's going out on a date. She's looking for a man. She wants a man to take care of her. She goes to an analyst. The therapist helps her understand that what she was really looking for is her father, because the man to take care of her, someone to watch over me, is really about a father figure. But what about a man? A man searches for a woman who's going to nurture him and take care of him and treat him well. Mother figures. Well, wait a minute. Let's say you're a woman who's pretty strong, and you go out there in the world, and you meet men. And certain men are attracted to you, and other men are not. You never know the difference, because the ones that are attracted to you are sucking up to you. And the ones who are not attracted to you are ignoring you. But see, if you're an attractive woman and you're out there, and you're an aggressive, attractive woman, the men who are attracted to you will be putting themselves in your path so that you could notice them, and once you notice them, you're going to be able to hook up with them in some way or other, you know, find a way to get together with them, and they'll get together with you, and you'll find they're very wonderful, sensitive beings. They're sensitive to all your feelings, sensitive to your needs, and you say to yourself, this is the kind of man I want. I want a man who's sensitive. But then all of a sudden, he's kind of like begging you to be there for him. He's asking you to be there all the time. He's trying to get insurance that you're going to be there for him. And he turns into a little boy. And you're just a woman who's out there in the world trying to date men. Suddenly find that every man turns into a little boy. How does that happen? Because you are a mother figure. But how did you become a mother figure? What happened? Because you were strong, and because you attracted somebody who was somewhere deep inside looking for mother figures, but you never knew it. Let's go back to men in general. There was a man I knew who was a single man, and he was wealthy, and he met a beautiful woman, and he was a fairly attractive guy. And he met this beautiful woman, and he said, I said to him, are you going to go out with her? Are you going to date her? He said, no. I said, why? He said, because she doesn't need anything. And I said, well, why wouldn't you go out with her? He said, well, she doesn't need anything. And if she doesn't need anything, I have nothing to offer. I thought that was very interesting. Because you get so used to being an authority figure, you get used to being a father figure, you get used to being a mother figure. And you kind of got to figure this out somewhere in your life. What kind of figure are you? What are you? I think about breast implants. Not for myself. Although maybe, you know. But think about that. When you get a breast implant of a large size, have you put the MF on your chest? Did you say mother figure now? You know, what am I? A mother figure. I am large-breasted. Here I am carrying two milk cartons for you, kitty, wherever you are. That's what I am. I am a mother figure, right? So now you attract men who may just want to have sex, who may just want to go somewhere. In other words, you're putting yourself out there. I am the female. I am the feeder. Maybe you're not a mother figure. Maybe you're a child figure. Maybe you're somebody who's feeding. Maybe you're a nurturer. But how many things do we do that make us symbols? If you get your fancy car, if you wear your fancy suits, you know, are you creating the symbolism in yourself? Erotic images, right? If you think about pornography, one of the things that are very hard to talk about, a person Is that a person in the pornography, in the erotic images? There are people who love to be part of erotic images. Certainly there are enough women and couples who like to present their stuff so that they send in films of themselves. Not that they're being abused or something, they're just dying to get on TV or something. What do they want to be? They want to be an erotic image. Why do you want to be an erotic image? What do you want? What does that mean? I want men to desire me. I want people to desire me. I want people to get hot for me. I want people to be out of control. We had a dancer in our studio recently who said the greatest desire she had was to have the men desire her. And she had to have that feeling. That's why she did her dance. She wanted desire. She wanted to feel that from them. Because then the men would want her. We did a little work on her history. Did your father want you? No. Oh. Are you fighting that battle? Yes. You can become a sexual symbol. You can become a pain symbol. Very interesting. You wear spikes. You wear boots. You look like an S&M leatherneck. You know what I mean? You walk around promising pain to people. And people are attracted to you. Do they say, I like pain, I like him because he's going to give me pain? No, they're going to say he's a really nice guy underneath. But you're attracted to the symbol of pain. What are the symbols that attract you? We often wondered about high-heeled shoes. You know, why are high-heeled shoes such an important symbol? You know, why are they considered so sexy? You know, one of the images that they did in one of the researches was because if a woman wears high-heeled shoes, she can't run away. That was the idea. That in a way it represented powerlessness in a way of them escaping you. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. We're going to be talking about you and your symbols today. And, of course, we're going to be taking your calls today, as usual, at 212-209-2900. You can start calling now. We will pick up your calls in a little bit. So, if you're the head of an organization, it is very sure, pretty much sure, that you're not going to be seen as a person. You're going to be seen as the boss, the father, the head of the organization. You could try to humanize yourself, but it's very hard because people want to see this authority. And no matter what you do, if you get a reaction and you think, why don't they see me, the person? Forget it. You're the head of the organization. You're not going to be seen as a person. Unless you've built an organization of people who can see you. And I think of that as my own organization where I work, where the people who are here are people who, you know, they're kind of very transparent with each other and they see each other. There are love symbols. Talk about symbols that we have. Think about these. We pick symbolic days. Mother's Day, the day that is symbolic of your love for your mother. Father's Day, birthdays, Valentine's Day, Christmas, holidays, all symbol days. It is on this day, so I'm going to get you a card based on symbols. And you go into a Hallmark store, you go into a store, and they have the symbols listed. This is a birthday card, this is a thinking of you card, this is an I'm sorry, I regret card. You know, I passed a regret card the other day and said, I'm sorry you lost your license. I couldn't imagine who would be buying or selling this card. But they actually had a card, regrets for you losing your license. Cute. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. If you create muscles, if you work out in the gym, if you see yourself as powerful and strong, if you build your muscles so strong and then you meet people and they look at you and they say, ah, how strong. Do they expect you to be strong? If you show frailty, do they feel that you've been fraudulent? Do they feel that you've lied to them in some way? If you wear a military outfit, and many people do, and you walk around wearing a uniform, are you allowed to be vulnerable? Well, you're not expected to be, you see. You're expected to be strong. A uniform supposedly stands for courage, and usually stands for not feeling much and never feeling pain, you know? So what about you? Have you been a symbol to somebody else? And here's the way I'm going to deal with you. I'm not going to deal with you as you poor victim. You've become a symbol. I'm going to talk to you about the beauty of your symbolic presentation of yourself, about what you've done to present yourself in a symbolic way, and why you might have done that. Because everybody who becomes a symbol to other people eventually becomes a symbol for a reason. Sometimes we elect symbols, you know, like we take a symbol of a dolphin and we'll say, oh, that dolphin, what a wonderful life he has, and the dolphin is a beautiful animal and he's a spiritual being, right? And sometimes I've looked at, one time I saw a film of dolphins raiding a baby tuna camp, and they were raiding a baby, and they were eating babies. They were eating baby tuna, because that's what they eat. What do you think tuna? What do you think dolphins eat? Vegetarian food? No, they were eating babies. And I remember one of the people watching it saying, no, that's not true. That can't be true about dolphins, because dolphins are angelic babies. Well, what about angels? How about that for a symbol? We want our other new symbol. Give me angels. And we'll say the angels are representative of all goodness. 212-209-2900. What's your symbol, fella? Miss, friend, what symbol do you live by, and how has this symbolism of somebody else, or what symbol are you searching for over and over again? And maybe it's time to give up the ghost, you know, start seeing people for who they are. That's what falling in love with, you know. Falling in love is always falling in love with a symbol. Because when you fall in love for the first time, you overlook all the bad things. You kind of magnify the good things. You think about it all the time because you love the chemistry of falling in love. You love the excitement of it. You love it. You're just feeling grand. And you think about the person all the time. You're obsessed. And you don't think about the fact that he's 36 years old and he still lives with his mother. It doesn't matter to you. You overlook that. He's looking for an apartment. Right? He's divorced from his wife, but they haven't separated yet. And they live in the same house, but they don't have sex. She's, you know, and you just make up things all the time. And you make them up because it is the symbol that's important to you, because it makes you feel good. It makes you salivate. See, instead of you getting the food. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Kenya.
Hello, Kenya.
How are you? I've often thought about this, and I want...
Did you like hearing me say your name on the air?
Yeah, because I like my name.
Kenya, I like your name. Thank you.
Okay. I really don't know what kind of symbol, what men see when they look at me. I know what I think I project. I'm very artsy and creative, but I have substance. I think sometimes, and I'm married, I've been married for 18 years, I think sometimes that people see the artsy and the creative part of me and they think it's flaky, or they don't feel as if I have feelings, that they misunderstand nice.
Well, what happens to you? Tell me the consequences.
What happens to me when I think people...
Well, when people do that, when they don't see you, but they see the arts...
I get angry.
Okay, well, what do they do to you?
I feel as if, you know, like if I give them a gift or if I go out of my way to do something for them, they don't seem as if they appreciate it.
Okay, now this is a very important thing.
Okay.
Because you're saying that you present yourself in such a way that people take you for granted.
That's what I think, yes.
That's what you think.
Right.
And they take you for granted for some reason. Because they assume you can.
Yes, and I can.
But that's a funny thing. Your name is Kenya.
Uh-huh.
Your name is Can You.
Uh-huh.
Kenya.
Uh-huh.
Renee, I mean, your name is I Can. Sure I can.
Right.
So people are always responding to you as if you can. So you're presenting yourself to people as, I am a loving, open being.
Yes.
Right? And here I am, and I'll give to you, and I give to you, and I give to you, but darn it, you better love me for giving to you.
Right. Well, I expect to be appreciated and respected, and sometimes I don't think that happens.
You know, Kenya, it doesn't, it's not the way of giving.
Okay.
The problem with it is giving to get, and many people do that.
Okay.
They give to get love. The symbol is the giving. The getting love doesn't come back. There's another level of giving where you give and you don't expect anything back. When somebody is giving to get love, they usually give to the wrong people.
Okay, I understand that online, you know, but I don't think that applies to me.
No.
I don't think so. I think because I am very creative and because I can be somewhat eccentric, people do not think that I, or feel that I am serious and that I have substance.
Sure. Now, that just can't be if you do have substance, you know what I mean? In other words, there has to be, you understand, you're a listener for a long time.
Yes.
You understand there must be something you put out that makes people believe you don't have substance. This is no mistake. It's not that you're just walking around with purple hair and people say you don't have substance. There is something that you must be putting out to people that says to them, don't take me seriously.
Oh, because I really don't get very upset about certain things that most people do get upset about. And I get upset about things that some people might just let it fly off their back.
Okay, so you and I are talking about two different things.
Okay.
I'm on your side.
Okay.
And I'm so much on your side, Kenya, that I want you to live a happier life.
Okay.
There is nothing that would please me more than to think your life from this phone call on became happier.
Okay.
There is only one way to look.
All right.
The way to look is on the inside.
Okay.
You cannot look at them and what they do. You have to look at you and what you do to produce it.
Okay.
You can't consider it's because they think of me this way. You have to kind of go after it because I present this to them.
Okay.
And maybe if I could learn what I present to them and deal with that, then maybe they will deal with me differently. It's the only way we could really get through life, you know, us getting through, each one of us, me included. Whenever people have a reaction to me that I question, I have to ask myself, how did I promote that?
Right.
It's like being a symbol, you know, like being an authority symbol.
Right.
In some way. If you present yourself as an authority, people will react to you as an authority.
Okay.
You know? And if you present yourself in a certain way to people and they react to you a certain way, you can only say to yourself, how am I promoting this? How am I making this happen over and over again? And if you ask yourself that question, not by finding fault with yourself, just by asking the question, you'll get to the bottom of it, and it'll be a much easier life.
Well, thank you so much, Amit.
You are such a beautiful person, Kenya.
Thank you, and you make it sound so simple, and I'm going to start.
Oh, it's not simple. It's just the question is always this. You see, when you point one finger at any individual, you always have four fingers pointed towards yourself.
Okay.
Or is it three?
It's
three.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure, thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What if your mate, I guess she has all the symbols that you enjoy, and you are projecting all the symbols that she enjoys?
That happens with couples.
Right.
Symbol to symbol. Absolutely.
As a matter of fact, I'm getting married in June or July. We're not 100% sure. We haven't locked down a definite date yet. But, I mean, I'm crazy about her. She loves all the symbols that are somewhat attractive.
Well, what symbols do you find that you're attracted to in her?
Her sexual, you talked about high heels. It's so funny. She loves them, and I'm very happy. But she's incredibly nurturing. She's like the mother figure that you talked about.
Yeah, she's a great mother figure.
Yeah, she's that for me. She's that the high heel thing. She's like everything.
She's Madonna. She's whore. She's all of that stuff. She's sexual. She's giving. She's loving. She's fabulous.
Everything that I like, I would love in a mate is like what she is, and she says the same thing about me, and you know, I don't think I'm too dominant because at work I'm not particularly dominant. And, you know, I had a great relationship with my dad. I mean, I loved him. So that's normal then. I mean, is that like a good, that's a good healthy relationship?
Well, you see, here's a question. Romance and marriage, they're usually built on symbolism. You know, I know a woman who was in her 60s, and her father died. And a few months later, she divorced her husband. Why did she do that? Because her husband was her father figure, and when her father finally left the planet, she no longer was attached to her husband, and she just left him. She just dropped all feelings towards her husband. People live symbolic lives, and hopefully you get attached by symbols, you get connected by symbols, and then you get to know each other. The first 2 or 3 years, lots of passion, lots of stuff. But then stuff gets in the way, you know? And if you're two people who could talk, communicate, and really be honest with each other, you get past the symbolic lives. If not, you run into real trouble. Because here she is, you thought she was always going to be sexy, you thought she was always going to be giving, and she turns out to have a personality of her own, and you're not ready to move with that, you know? She thought you would always be strong, she thought you would always be providing, but, you know, you lost your job, and now you can't give her what she needs. People in couples who start off with symbolic relationships, if they could work it through, if they could deal with each other, if they have enough love built up during that time that they're symbols, they work through all these oddities. So I wouldn't give up just because you're sure that you're all symbols for each other. I wouldn't quit now.
Oh, I would never quit. But I just want to interject something. Well, this is my second marriage. And my first one, I married my high school sweetheart. And we're still friends to this day, but we're not, you know, she doesn't live anywhere in New York. She's on the other side of the country. We're friendly, though. You know, we talk often. However, I did have an argument with my fiancée once, and she did something that none of the women I've ever dated ever did. She got sort of, it's like she listens to your show, Armand, and I know she doesn't. She said, you know, I really didn't like how you spoke to me. You upset me. And then I felt so happy that she took that approach because I didn't realize I upset her. And then I really just sort of, I surrendered to her emotion, and I didn't do my normal thing, like, oh, well, you know, I didn't mean to do, I didn't explain myself well. I just said, you know, I'm sorry, and I didn't mean to upset you. And it was so cool, and I was so happy. And then the rest of the day went on without a hitch. I mean, you know.
And you're especially grateful because you have somebody who will tell you when things go wrong. Because
for a man like you,
the worst thing in the world is to get sandbagged. And sandbagged is when you don't know something is wrong, and it is.
You know what? You're 100% right.
I know.
Even at work, you've been sandbagged. Mm-hmm. Even at work, when that happens, like if I work in a team. I have a team of people I work with, and, you know, I constantly communicating. You have to communicate in the job I do, you know, and when things go sort of wrong, which happens, no one's perfect, and no one expects you to be perfect, but you sort of communicate, and I love it, especially my fiancé. We have, like, the best communication, like, ever, that I've ever experienced.
Good for you. What's your name, by the way?
Alex. I've called you before, actually.
Alex, good to talk to you. Congratulations. Thank you for bringing your wisdom to us.
And I love listening to your voice. You have an excellent voice. It's very calming and soothing. I mean, I guess you know that, though.
Well, I'm glad. It's the only one I have. Thanks for calling in. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'll play you a little upbeat music today, because we need it. And then we'll continue with your calls at 212-209-2900. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. A little manzanita, doing arranca. Manzanita doing arranca. Pretty hot stuff, don't you think? Hey, Freudian cymbals. Let's not forget those. When I was a kid, I was a drummer, and we used to look at... Zildjian was my favorite cymbals, because these are cymbals that you play on your drums, you know, cymbals that you hit with sticks. You got to have cymbals. So mine said Zildjian, and then somebody said Freudian, and I thought, we should make Freudian cymbals. Freudian cymbals, according to Freud, there were cymbals that people had, like anything that represented an opening of some sort, a tunnel, a window, was considered a vagina. Anything that was a tall, thick, long structure was considered a penis, if it had power. So they had phallic symbols, was one word they used. What was the word they used for the other symbol? There you go. Try to figure that. What if it's a symbol of a woman? You know, of a vagina? Well, it was called a yonic symbol, Y-O-N-I-C, after the Indians, yoni. See, Y-O-N-I, because phallic was one. I guess it was Greeks and Indians. But this is, you know, if you think about the symbols in dreams, we dream in symbols. We never dream in real things, you know, we dream in symbols. Why these symbols? Because there's association with these symbols. If you have an association, like I said about the child who has been bitten by mosquitoes, the association is usually to a feeling, not to the thing itself. People who have... fears of flying, there's a certain association that has to do with being out of control. So we're talking about symbols and being somebody's symbol, and we're saying one of the things you got to look at yourself is why you paint yourself that way. Why do you want to be that way for people? Maybe it's okay. Maybe it's the best way. In nature, there are animals that make themselves symbols all the time. It's the best way to catch your mate. You know, throw in a little deceptive symbol. Be something that you're not. There are certain animals that package themselves as food, you know, or they throw out, they make them look like they're vulnerable, and then when somebody comes over to eat them, they eat it. Right? So, part of nature. 212-209-2900, but sometimes it gets to hurt. Sometimes you get caught in the trap of it, and then you get angry. And you say, why don't people see me for who I am? Well, how many people show themselves for who they really are? Very few. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Yes, Armand. I wanted to comment on your show. Excellent insight. I don't know if you read a lot or you just know everything. But anyway, the thing about the sandbagging, that happened to me recently, and... Wow, that was a long time to recover from that. I met this person, and we were pretty tight, and all of a sudden, just she sent me an email, said, that's it. I don't want to talk to you or see you anymore, and wouldn't talk to me at all, and there was no way that there was any indication. It was just like you said, that you said exactly right, that sandbagging. Took me a long time to get over that.
Well, let me ask you something. Are you somebody who is notoriously indecisive?
You know what? With some things I am, with others, it's a paradox. Sometimes yes, sometimes absolutely no.
Okay, and are you always thinking a lot?
That's a good question. I would think...
Would you say you're more of a thinking man or a feeling man?
Feeling man.
And when you are connected to this person, when you were really connected to her, there was everything that you saw about her was kind of beautiful, right? She didn't give you any signs that she was going to dump you.
No, sir. That's right.
So something went on that you didn't see. And what's your name, by the way?
Yeah, Robert from the Bronx.
Robert, you know, I mean, my heart goes out to you. It goes out to you because there are certain people who just can't see it coming. And they don't know how they make it come in. And let me give you an example of this. Weightlifters. Now, this is not all weightlifters, but many weightlifters I have met. Weightlifters seem to be dumped by women more than anybody else. That's a very strange generalization, don't you think? Why is that should happen? And here's what we found out. that generally many people who lift weights cannot stand the smell of their bodies. They don't like to sweat. They don't like the smell of sweat. They sweat, but they shower. So they go into the shower and they get themselves clean, and they shower two or three times a day. Now they go home and they get with their women and they lay in bed with their women, but they have no smell. And they have no smell, so the women are not bonded to them in any way because they're always being clean. And so the woman eventually goes off and she meets somebody who she can smell. And she suddenly falls madly in love with this person she can smell who doesn't shower three times a day and doesn't know why, but she turns around to her weightlifter boyfriend and says, I'm done with you. I don't know why I'm done with you, but I'm done with you. Does he know that showering three times a day is causing this? No, he doesn't know that. So there are certain times when there's an innocence about you that you just can't figure what happened. But now we're going to take it one more step with you, Robert. You chose someone who is dishonest. You chose a woman who does not tell the truth. And somewhere in there, something inside you had an inkling that she was not a truth teller. Because if she were a truth teller, she would have told you, number one, why she left. And she would have told you, number two, that it was coming.
Yeah, I just don't understand why she's in her 50s. Why a person of that age, I mean, this is not a teenager, why they would do that? I mean,
sure.
I went over, I tried to talk to her at her house.
And she won't talk to you.
Wouldn't talk. She said, well, shut the door on me.
She put you on the dead list. She was just afraid of you. She will not have any contact with you at all. Now, what happened to her in the last relationship, do you remember?
Oh, she's had two divorces.
And is she in contact with her two previous husbands?
The one she is, because she gets child support from him.
Yeah, and what about the other one?
The other one, she says that was like a late teenage, early 20s mistake, that she just went off and did something and it was a mistake.
Yep. Okay, so there is something. Someday you will get to meet somebody who will be honest with you, and along the way, you will open communications and you will talk to them and you will say, you know, can we find out what's going on with each other the whole way? Because there's a part of you that doesn't understand it, Robert. You don't understand when the sign is coming. And I feel sorry for you, but you got to press a little harder to make it happen. You got to
Don't feel sorry for me. The only thing was the woman was so...
Why shouldn't I feel sorry for you?
Well, I don't know. It's just...
Wait a minute. You feel pain.
I appreciate the empathy, I guess.
Yeah, I feel sorry for you because it hurts.
But at the time, it was a few months ago, at the time...
It still hurts, I could hear.
It was unbelievable, you know.
Sure.
The most puzzling thing was the fact that, you know, she didn't talk to me.
You get shut off. I understand.
The no closure was the worst thing because, you know, it's like if someone breaks into your house and they steal everything but your certain valuable, you wonder, why did you leave this but you took my picture of my mother? You know, just let me know, you know?
Well, let me ask you something while I got you, Robert.
Yeah.
What about your mother?
What about her? My mother passed away many, many years ago.
Yeah, I bet you miss her a lot, too.
Yeah, I was a teenager, so it was a long time ago.
So what was it like for you when she died?
Well, it was quiet. You know, I no longer got her advice or didn't get those looks from her telling me that I should do this or I shouldn't do that.
How old are you now?
57.
So, what?
57.
So you're 57. So the way that you looked up to your mom and your mom gave you advice, and when your mom was gone suddenly and she died, you had this vacuum in your life. It was like an emptiness. And when this woman left you, that same emptiness appeared. So somehow, her dissing you the way she did was symbolic of your mother's death. And what you dealt with that was such an important thing was not just her leaving you, but the death of your mother. It brings up big pain. The pain is so much more shocking because you were left as a child as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I first met her, she was very kind to me. She used to cook for me, and she gave me a wonderful birthday gift.
Just like a good mama.
It was really weird. I hadn't experienced that with a woman for many years, and it was unbelievable. And then all of a sudden, to just lose it in one day, like you said, sandbagged, was, you know, it was like she was on the Titanic. And
well, but you see, I'm going back to your mom. She presented you with being a substitute for your mom. She said, look, I'm going to make your birthday for you. That's what mothers do for kids. I'm going to make your birthday. I'm going to make you a meal. And you said, you know, you noted that she was 50 years old as well. You see her as a mature woman. And you feel safe and you feel kind of fallen into this mother-like person. But what I said was, when you were young and when you were a teenager, the pain that you went through with your mom was so much so that you never really dealt with it. So the pain goes on a hiatus until you find a substitute for her, which is this woman. And then when that woman disses you and does the very same thing like your mother did, she dies, she disappears, it brings up all that pain. So there's an opportunity inside you, Robert, for you to deal with the original pain. But the place you've got to look at, not at this woman, but you got to find little Robert from back then and how he felt when he lost his mom.
Yeah,
do you remember what that felt like, Robert?
Yeah, it was like being in quicksand. You know, there was nothing to hold on to. You're just sinking down. You figure it's going to be all right, but you just didn't have that support system. I don't want to say a crutch, because a mother isn't a crutch. It's a family member. It's your, you know, one of your closest
people. You felt like you were in quicksand, sinking down, and there was nothing to hold on to. That's a terrible feeling, huh?
Yeah, the other thing I want to ask you, so you real quick, was you mentioned another relationship about this woman whose father died and then she left the husband. I had a situation like that recently. This was a few years back, a girl that I was seeing. When her father died, it was just, we weren't married, but it was the same thing. The sex totally, everything ended. It was amazing. It was interesting how you said that.
So same thing kind of happens. So you're going to learn more about psychology. You're going to keep listening to The Positive Mind. You're going to check yourself out and find out as much about yourself as you can. And eventually, over time, you learn to pay attention to certain facts with people.
All right. Well, sometime I want to get some of those books you're reading, because you somehow learned all this stuff. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't know if it came from the books. But thanks for calling in, Robert.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What did it feel like when your mother died? It felt like quicksand. Nothing to hold on to. Can you picture that, being a teenager and having that happen? Picture that. Young. You have a mother. She tells you what to do. She sets your guidelines. She dies, and you're in quicksand. Because, clearly, there was nobody there to hold on to. So the support system wasn't there for Robert. His father and brothers and sisters, whoever they were, didn't give him the support system. So he got older, and he went through relationships, and he's looking, and he finally finds somebody who says, "Hi, sonny, let me make you a birthday." And, of course, it lights him up again. He's Mama. And then Mama dies. And you understand the pain. It's like quicksand. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Armand. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. What's your name?
My name is Jennifer.
Hello, Jennifer.
I'm kind of nervous, actually. But I'm glad that you started taking calls again. I missed that time.
Yeah, we did. We did a major survey in BAI, and we did a survey with all of our people, and it turned out that people were asking me to take more calls, and I've, so for the last few weeks, I've been focusing on taking as many calls as possible.
Okay.
We're about to come up to our fund drive next week, when we won't be taking calls again. You know, do you have a radio on anywhere near you?
No, actually, I have it off.
Okay,
you having a bad feedback?
Not a bad feedback, Jennifer, just a little echo, but maybe it's just the echo of the
I have
gods.
An air conditioner on, I don't know if that's...
No, it's really fine, so
okay.
Tell me about you.
All right, actually, two things. When you were talking about the shoes and the boots and stuff like that, I just realized that I just like low shoes. That's what I
low
like.
Heels, right?
Yeah.
'Cause you like to run.
Yes.
You don't like to be hobbled.
No, I don't.
I understand, because you've got to run away, because you're somebody who's been dancing your whole life. You've learned how to get out of bad situations easily, haven't you?
I try to.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Liberia.
In Liberia. So did you have the kind of a family that was very easy to get along with, or did you have to take care of yourself as a kid?
I think I had to mostly take care of myself because, you know, my parents had to come over to the United States.
Sure. So you need fast shoes if you're going to take care of yourself.
And in that same line, I was speaking with one psychologist the other day, and she asked me, she said, "What is your relationship like with your mother?" And I just went blank, Amon. I didn't know, like, what is it?
what is this feeling of a relationship with my mother?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So your mother came over to America and left you there for a while, right?
Yes, she did.
And your grandmother took care of you?
Oh, no, aunt.
Your aunt took care of you. Mm-hmm, what was your relationship with your aunt like?
It was distant.
So you know that feeling. You know that feeling of distance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever find anybody who you felt really close to?
No. No, not.
Never.
No, not really. I was very close with my father before my mother left. But then I had to go and live with my aunt, so.
So you were close to your father, but when your mother left, she took your father with her.
No, he was in the same country, but I didn't stay with him.
Oh,
yeah.
That must have been terrible.
Yes. Yes, it was terrible. I couldn't understand why I couldn't stay.
You couldn't understand why he didn't want you there?
Yeah. So when I came, I asked him, I said, why is it that I couldn't stay? And they said, well, you were a girl and you needed to grow up with a woman, you know, so.
Which is a very strong Liberian thought, by the way. That's
yes.
A very, it's a cultural thought as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure in some way he figured out this might be best. But you must have spent the rest of your life looking to find somebody who you could trust and love.
Yes, I think I found that person.
Who is that person?
My husband.
What's his name?
His name is Wema.
Wema?
Yes.
How beautiful.
Uh-huh.
You actually trust Wema?
Yes, I do.
How nice for you.
Yeah.
How nice for you. I'm glad for you. How long have you been with him?
We've been married for about 2 years, going on to three.
Well, you know, the question becomes the following. You and women are a real important question here. You need to heal your relationship with women. Who's your closest woman friend?
I have a friend who I went to college with.
Do you trust her completely?
Oh, she's wonderful.
Good, then you're working on it as well.
Oh, okay. That,
well,
that's...
I think you're on the right path, Jennifer, so knowing that.
Okay.
I think you're on the right path. I look forward to following you in the future.
I
thanks
like
for
that
calling
assurance.
In.
Thank you so much, Omar.
Sure.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Okay. Goodbye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one more call. Hi there. You're on the air. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi. You're on the air. We got one more there. I know. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes.
Come on?
Yes.
Yeah, hey, you got a great show, man. I listen to it every day.
Well, thank you very much. And what's your name?
Joe from the Bronx.
Joe from the Bronx, thank you.
And them people, man, from Pacifica is crazy. You know, I mean, they don't know what they're talking about. You got great program and everything. But the reason why I call, right, I'm attracted to women with fat, dairy hairs. Okay?
Sure.
That makes me.
Well, that makes you a man who's attracted to women who have a lot of your... See, there's a part of you that loves the sensual part. You know, it's a sensual man. I understand.
Yeah,
I understand.
Like the
but you also...
There he is, huh?
Yeah, but you also like women who are loving. You also like women who could love you. It's not just a physical thing. You're a man who's a sensitive man.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thank
have
you for calling
now.
In. You too.
Okay. Peace and love.
Peace and love. He thought he was going to get me by saying it. 212-209-2900. I wonder if there is one more call out there, Michael. Let's take one more. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
There is one more call out there, Michael.
Hey, it sounds like me. Hi there.
Hey, what's up?
Who is this?
This is, hi.
Hi there. Well, that is getting very interesting, don't you think?
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. What's your name?
What the hell?
I know we're getting a very funny feedback, huh?
What the hell?
WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.
Yes. 212-209. We're not going to take any more calls. Something just happened with our thing. It's all right. No, we're not. We have good people here, and I want to thank Michael G. Haskins, who has, for the last few weeks, strategically mastered these phone calls coming in. And it's not an easy job, believe it or not, so it's through him and my gratitude to you, Michael, that we've been able to do what we've been doing with you. I am very grateful to you, and I want to thank all of you for being with me. Hey, I'm going to let you go out with a very interesting piece of music that you probably have never heard. You remember that old Sonny and Cher piece, The Beat Goes On, and The Beat Goes On, diddy-diddy? That was started by Buddy Rich. And Buddy Rich originally wrote that song, and his daughter, Kathy Rich, age 12, sang it originally. So you're going to see a 12-year-old person singing The Beat Goes On, which is all about symbols, about the symbols of our life. I'm going to play that for you. And if you want to get in touch with me, go to armand@thepositivemind.com, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. You could, of course, go to WBAI.org. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. So here comes Kathy Rich with Buddy Rich, and The Beat Goes On.
Drums keep happening.